website. It says contact us, but they have them everywhere else. And so it's very clear that we are under attack. It's very clear from the language of the previous president and from our governor, who's interested in being his running mate, that we have targets on our backs. And we in El Paso, along with people in Uvalde and all across the country, know that when you mix that kind of rhetoric with gun laws that we have and policies and laws like SB4, it's a very dangerous cocktail.
Marisa Limon Garza, we want to thank you so much for being with us, Executive Director of Las Americas Immigrant Advocacy Center. We're going to link to your piece in The Messenger, "The Senate Shouldn't Treat Migrants as Bargaining Chips." That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feldstein, Augusta, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warrenoff, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Community Radio, and we're in the middle of our end-of-year campaign. Help us meet our $75,000 goal by making a contribution today. KBOO's different hues of independent programming are only possible with your support. Give now at kboo.fm/give. You can also donate by texting KBOO to 44321 or by mailing a check to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, Oregon, 97214. Help shine some light on our radio community by donating now.
Do you need some quiet mood music? Some soothing sounds?
Well, then never listen to Life During Wartime, because they just play really obnoxious DIY punk from local bands and international acts. Sometimes they have bands play live, and it's all with the yelling and the screaming and the, I don't like my mom and dad or my teachers and all that kind of stuff. That's Life During Wartime, every other Wednesday from 10 to midnight, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Support for the KBOO Evening News comes from KBOO members and Lori Sonnenfeld Realty, helping people buy or sell a home or duplex in the greater Portland area for the past 35 years. More information at CascadiaHomes.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the 2022 Domicile Unknown Report reveals last year was the deadliest on record for homeless Multnomah County residents.
The USDA moves to limit old-growth logging.
And in international news, the European Union reaches a new agreement on immigration that aid groups say will be disastrous for asylum seekers' rights.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, December 20, 2023. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year campaign, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Alex Solomon.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. At least 315 people died while experiencing homelessness in Multnomah County in 2022. That's according to a report released by the county today. This is a 63% increase in the number of deaths of unhoused people in 2021 and is six times larger than in 2010, the first year the county began gathering the data. Nearly half of all recorded homeless deaths were deemed accidental, with the vast majority of those, 123, categorized as drug overdoses. The overdoses were often from using a combination of illicit drugs. Those living on the street were 37 times more likely to die from a drug overdose than the overall county population. People experiencing homelessness were also killed in traffic crashes at a rate 45 times higher than the overall population last year. They were 31 times more likely to die from homicide and made up a quarter of all people who died by homicide in the county in 2022. Kaya Sand, executive director of nonprofit Street Roots, wrote in the report's preface, quote, Living so much of one's life without secure housing is deadly. Vulnerable to both guns and cars, a toxic drug supply, and despair, end quote. 17 of the 315 deaths were suicides. Stay tuned to KBOO News In Depth at 5:30 tonight for a detailed breakdown of the Domicile Unknown report with Street Roots Editor-in-Chief Kay Rambo.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture moves to conserve groves of old-growth trees on national forests across the U.S. and limit logging. The changes are, in part, a reaction to how climate change increases the threats forests face from wildfires, insects, and disease. Agriculture Secretary John Vilsack said the changes would, quote, create a commitment to resiliency, a commitment to restore and protect the existing old growth that we have from the threats that we see. The proposal would sharply limit commercial timber harvests in old growth forests, while still allowing logging in mature forests that have not yet reached old growth stage. Most of these forests are in western states like Oregon, Idaho, California, and Montana. Tuesday's changes include the first nationwide amendment to the U.S. Forest Service Management Plan in the agency's 118-year history.
In Washington state, community groups and tribes are working to raise awareness of the ongoing cleanup of toxic nuclear waste at the Hanford site, which is the decommissioned plant that produced plutonium for the nation's defense program for more than four decades. As Suzanne Potter reports, their goal is to raise public awareness in the new year.
We all live downriver from Hanford. That's the message painted on the windows of the Patagonia store in Seattle's Belltown neighborhood. It's a reminder of the continuing danger created by the remaining toxic nuclear waste at the Hanford site in Benton County. Advocates with the nonprofit Hanford Challenge painted the mural to remind people that everyone will suffer if the waste seeps into the groundwater and into the Columbia River. Nicholas Peterson is executive director of Hanford Challenge, a nonprofit group that tracks the cleanup efforts.
We are holding the federal government, the contractors doing this work, accountable to make sure that they don't walk away from this cleanup and leave a mess that future generations will have to deal with.
During World War II, U.S. government nuclear scientists at Hanford created the plutonium used in the atomic bomb, contaminating the soil and leaving behind 56 million gallons of high-level toxic waste. The current plan is to transform much of the waste into a glass-like material, put it in steel tanks, and bury it underground. The Yakima Nation's Environmental Restoration Waste Management Program has teamed up with the nonprofit Columbia Riverkeeper to teach future generations about the ongoing cleanup and offer field trips to the site. Peterson says his organization is working to get Hanford into the standard curriculum in all Washington State high schools.
We want people in especially the Pacific Northwest to really take ownership of Hanford, and we can demand a better and safer cleanup for all of us.
The Federal Department of Energy maintains a page dedicated to the Hanford site cleanup. People interested in volunteering can contact Hanford Challenge and Columbia Riverkeeper. For Washington News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The Colorado Supreme Court rules that former President Donald Trump won't be on the 2024 primary ballot in the state. On Tuesday, they handed down a decision saying he is disqualified from holding office again because he engaged in insurrection through his actions leading up to the January 6 attack on the Capitol. The ruling is based on Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, passed shortly after the Civil War, which disqualifies people who engage in insurrection against the Constitution after taking an oath to support it. Noah Bookbinder, president of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics, which brought the suit in Colorado, said the decision was, quote, not only historic and justified, but is also necessary to protect the future of democracy in our country, end quote. Trump posted on Truth Social today, writing, quote, what a shame for our country. Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy pledged to drop out of the Republican primary in Colorado, putting pressure on his fellow candidates to do the same. The Colorado court's decision would not affect Trump being on the November presidential ballot there, should he be the Republican candidate.
To international news, where countries in the European Union will be overhauling their shared immigration system. Today's agreement came after a three-year negotiation process between the 27 member countries. It also follows a steady rise in anti-migrant public sentiment across Europe. The agreement will make it easier to deport failed asylum seekers and will more broadly limit the entry of migrants to the European Union bloc. The deal will also make it harder for asylum seekers to move on from the countries in which they arrive, and provides a mechanism for countries like Italy and Greece, which bear the largest burden of asylum applicants, to be compensated by other countries. The number of people seeking asylum in Europe has grown in recent years as people flee violence in the Middle East and Africa and seek economic opportunities. The peak of European asylum immigration came in 2015, when more than 1 million Syrian refugees came to the West escaping war. The deal left certain questions unresolved, including whether the right to claim asylum would be protected in member countries' constitutions, how asylum deportees will be deported back to their home countries, and whether more legal paths to migration will be created. Human rights organizations criticized the agreement for violating migrant rights and for focusing on surveillance rather than protecting migrant lives. Amnesty International said the deal, quote, will set back European asylum law for decades, and that the, quote, likely outcome is a surge in suffering on every step of a person's journey to seek asylum in the EU, end quote. In order to become law, the plan must still pass an EU approval process.
As we heard earlier, former President Donald Trump is disqualified for the Colorado ballot. But one expert says the case is likely headed to the Supreme Court. Texas Governor Greg Abbott signs a bill allowing police to arrest migrants, and Western state election officials continue to quit. With more on the story, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Attacks by extremist settlers against the Palestinians in the West Bank must stop, and those committing the violence must be held accountable.
On Monday in Tel Aviv, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin expressed administration support for Israel, but also concern for the mounting death toll among Palestinians. President Joe Biden has said Israel risks losing international support because of what he called indiscriminate bombing. In a major legal blow to former President Donald Trump, the Colorado Supreme Court has removed Trump from the state's 2024 ballot, ruling his candidacy is prohibited under the 14th Amendment. Christy Green is a former federal prosecutor and says it's hard to predict what will happen when the case gets to the conservative-led Supreme Court.
It is a result that is interesting. It is a result that seems like the right result. The big question will be whether or not it holds, because this is surely going to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Former President Donald Trump is also facing criticism, even from Republicans, for saying migrants are poisoning the blood of our country. In an unusually sharp comment, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell pointed to his wife, a member of Trump's cabinet, who was born in Taiwan.
Well, it strikes me that didn't bother him when he appointed Elaine Chao, Secretary of Transportation.
Republican Governor of Texas Greg Abbott signed new legislation which allows police to arrest undocumented migrants anywhere in the state. It's his latest immigration enforcement move and an escalation in Abbott's dispute with the Biden administration.
Senate Bill 4, cracking down on human smuggling and stash houses, is now law in the state of Texas.
Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador pledged to fight SB 4 and said the foreign ministry will challenge the law. A recent study found about 4 in 10 top local election officials in Western states have left office over the last 3 years. Michael Beckel is with Issue 1, which did the research. He says those offices are starved for funding and under constant attack.
It would be really incumbent on a lot of our political leaders to take that temperature down, to ratchet down the rhetoric and remind people about all of the checks and balances that are in place, all of the transparency measures that are in place.
Arizona saw the highest turnover, twice the national rate. Black voters and a coalition of groups in North Carolina are suing for new congressional and legislative maps under the Voting Rights Act. They argue all of the maps enacted earlier this year by the Republican-controlled legislature are intended to diminish the power of black voters. They want the new districts in time for the 2026 election. Finally, New York has created a commission to study reparations for residents of African descent. New York Governor Kathy Hochul says while the state helped slaves find freedom, it also benefited from the slave trade.
What is hard to embrace is the fact that our state also flourished from that slavery.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to an end-of-year campaign edition of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $75,000 by the end of the year. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Street Roots editor-in-chief Kay Rambo on their latest article for the paper. It covers the 2022 Domicile Unknown Report, which tracks the conditions that led to the deaths of at least 315 homeless Multnomah County residents last year. At 6, it's WINGS, Women's International News Gathering Service. At 6:30, it's Free Culture Radio. Then at 7, Culture in Motion with Mike Crenshaw. Your weather forecast tonight will be cloudy with an overnight low of 38. Tomorrow, partly sunny and a high of 50. Today in history, in 1946, Christmas classic It's a Wonderful Life premiered at the Globe Theater in New York to mixed reviews. The quote of the day is from American astronomer Carl Sagan, who died this day in 1996. He said, quote, "For most of human history, we have searched for our place in the cosmos. Who are we? What are we? We find that we inhabit an insignificant planet of a humdrum star lost in a galaxy tucked away in some forgotten corner of a universe in which there are far more galaxies than people. We make our world significant by the courage of our questions and by the depth of our answers."
The U.S. Senate confirms its first Native woman to a federal judgeship in Oklahoma. Sarah Hill will serve on the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Oklahoma. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Sarah Hill, the former Attorney General of the Cherokee Nation, has made history with her confirmation to serve as the first female Native American federal judge in Oklahoma. Hill, a citizen of the Cherokee Nation, was confirmed Tuesday by the U.S. Senate to serve on the United States District Court for the Northern District of Oklahoma. In November, during her nomination hearing, the Senate Judiciary Committee questioned Hill about tribal sovereignty and challenges she faced as tribal judge.
Post-McGirt especially has been it's been very challenging. There's been a great increase in the number of criminal cases that are being heard. Indian tribes have jurisdiction over crimes committed by Indians across their Indian country. So throughout the reservation of the Cherokee Nation, the Cherokee Nation has jurisdiction, and the Office of the Attorney General is responsible for prosecuting those. So as the Attorney General, it has been the responsibility post-McGirt to scale up that office in a way that so we were able to handle all the different cases that came to us. And I think that, you know, that's something that for people who have Indian country in their districts are probably more familiar with that process and may not be that familiar to other people.
Hill was also asked if she would serve differently on the federal bench.
Certainly, a district court judge for the United States is an entirely different job than the job of an advocate. As Attorney General, of course, I was an advocate for the tribe's legal position and for its rights. Like all attorneys, I would advocate on behalf of my client with all the intellect and all of the strategic thought I could put into it on behalf of the nation. For a federal district judge, it's an entirely different job. The job is to look at all the cases that come before you impartially and fairly, and looking at everything on their own terms, and then applying the facts to the law. And it's a much different role entirely.
The Cherokee Nation celebrated her confirmation, as well as a group of national Native organizations. They say Hill brings a critical perspective and deep knowledge of federal Indian law. There are 39 federally recognized tribes in Oklahoma. Young Native people are making strides in leadership. Tribal college students were among tribal leaders at the White House Tribal Nation Summit held this month in Washington, D.C. Saria Taylor, who holds the current title of Miss American Indian Higher Education Consortium, was among them.
A lot of the times I think youth are told, you're the voice of the future, you're our future. But in reality, we're the present. I really think we need to be here for these conversations to know what's happening right now today. We will be taking on these positions, and we need to learn more about what's expected and you know, just what's happening with our tribes currently.
Taylor says one of the themes she heard throughout the summit was efforts to heal tribal communities.
I think it is really vital for our communities that we really emphasize the healing aspect. One of the panel members mentioned that he has grandchildren and that, you know, he wants them to be healed also from the trauma that occurs and the generational trauma that's passed down. And I thought that was a really beautiful sentiment.
Taylor, who promotes wellness in tribal communities, is using her Miss AHEC title to talk about food sovereignty and healing.
I think there's a lot of beauty and a lot of livelihood in our food and how we heal as people. So something I've been working on recently is I've been interviewing different Indigenous folks and talking about the importance of food to them and how it's helped with their healing journeys. I've learned a lot about how sovereign food is and how much power it holds. Like when we look at corn, we can use corn for prayers. We can use corn for toys for children, like with little corn dolls. And obviously we use it for food and it has different roles in ceremony. And I think that's really beautiful.
Taylor's attending the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe, New Mexico. The senior is studying creative writing, focusing on poetry. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The American Federation of Teachers, or AFT, is providing grants to its local affiliates to push forward community solutions to the issues facing students and faculty. AFT Washington is one of 38 recipients. Eric Tegetoff has the details.
The American Federation of Teachers is partnering with organizations around the country to promote community solutions to the issues education is facing. AFT's Powerful Partnerships Institute has provided $1 million in grants to 38 state and local affiliates, including AFT Washington. In Washington, they partnered with the Alliance for a Just Society to increase opportunities for students of color in community and technical colleges. Fernando Mejia Ledesma is with the AJS-founded Community for Our Colleges Coalition.
Students of color, immigrants, and really all the students that have been historically disenfranchised, they can not only navigate the system, but also finish on time. And then when they finish, they can either transfer to a four-year college or get a good job that has really good wages and working conditions.
As part of this initiative, AFT Washington and its partners are working to help more undocumented students get access to financial aid, improve pay equity for community and technical college faculty, and increase access to affordable housing and child care. President of AFT Washington, Karen Strickland, says the people most affected by these issues are leading the charge.
It's the workforce and it's the students who know where the biggest obstacles are, where the challenges are, where the needs are. And so that is what drives the coalition.
AFT Washington and the Community for Our Colleges Coalition wants the state to make community college accessible for everyone by making it tuition-free. Mejia Ledesma says Washington already is moving in the right direction.
The direction that we're taking right now is one of justice, one of equity, and we're going to continue pushing on that. We hope that we can continue being an example for the rest of the country.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegetoff. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
So are you packing your bags for a holiday getaway? Well, cardiologists say winter holiday travel requires special preparations for folks living with heart disease or stroke risks. Farah Siddiqui has more on that story in Missouri.
AAA is projecting a record 7.5 million air passengers will travel over the next 2 weeks. Cardiologists and American Heart Association suggest some pre-travel planning for Missourians living with heart disease or stroke risks and other chronic health conditions. Cold temperatures and elevation can affect oxygen levels in circulation and put extra strain on the heart. Dr. Kim Perry, Chief Medical Officer at Valor Health, says if your doctor says it's safe to travel, make a medical list and check it twice before heading out.
Make sure your medications are clearly labeled, including dosages and pharmacy information, and you have enough for your entire trip. Take more just in case. If you're on a plane, be in an aisle seat. If you're on a water pill or diuretic, you're going to be sitting for a long period of time. Your compression socks may be suggested.
Perry adds, if you start to feel bad in transit, it is vital to notify travel and medical staff immediately. And for all travelers, she suggests staying hydrated, don't overindulge in food or drink, know your physical activity limits, pace yourself, and rest as often as you need while on vacation. Perry advises patients who have had cardiac events within the past 6 months to clear any travel with both their primary and cardiac doctors. If you have an implanted device or use a special machine like a CPAP, talk to airlines, trainer bus companies, or cruise ships about what they allow and know how to go through security checks properly. It's also important to keep device information cards with you.
You don't need to avoid travel at all. Just take the steps to prepare for a successful, fun trip and enjoy the holidays.
The Framingham Heart Study, the longest running and largest study of its kind, suggests women who vacation at least twice a year reduce their heart attack risk by 8 times compared to those who vacation no more than once every 6 years. And men who vacation are 30% less likely to have heart attacks compared to those who don't take time off. For Missouri News Service, I'm Farah Siddiqui. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
KBOO poet, Dan Raphael doesn't trust polls or politicians.
H.L. Mencken said, "No one ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American public, and that was way before television and the internet. A recent poll shows more people have confidence in how Trump would handle the Israeli-Hamas war than in Biden. The economy has made a strong recovery from COVID and inflation, but a majority of Americans don't think so. Not that I'm a Biden fan or believe the president actually runs the country. I do believe that politics has long been a choice of lesser evils. Portland mayoral candidates Mingus Maps and Rene Gonzalez said they're running because Portland's gone too far to the left. Like, how can you get further left than Ted? I've never met a developer or policeman I didn't like Wheeler. In the past, the powers that be underestimated the resolve of the American public, from Vietnam to equal rights to the Dakota Pipeline. I hope we peeps can still sufficiently mobilize. So, as they say in Chicago, vote early and vote often, remembering we vote in a lot more ways than with a ballot." For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to an end-of-year campaign edition of the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, December 20th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories, tips, and ideas at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, Chris Gow, David Rosenberg, and Reed Johnson. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Alex Gonzalez, Eric Tegadoff, Suzanne Potter, Farah Siddiqui, Nadia Ramlagan, Antonia Gonzalez, and Edwin J. Vieira. The director of Evening News is the intrepid Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Michelle Coppola.
And I'm Alex Solomon. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year campaign, so now is a great time to join. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm speaking with Kay Rambo, editor-in-chief at Street Roots, about their latest article for the paper. It's called 2022 Deadliest Year on Record for Homeless Multcoe Residents. Multnomah County's 2022 Domicile Unknown report finds 315 homeless residents died amid surge in overdoses, homicides, self-harm deaths, and traffic fatalities. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us, Kay. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Thanks for having me. How are you?
You know, I'm doing okay. I'm glad we can talk about this. So let's get into it. To start, what is the Domicile Unknown report?
Domicile Unknown is an annual report that the county puts together in collaboration with Street Roots Advocacy that details the deaths of homeless county residents in the prior calendar year. And this year, it also includes a new data set, whereas historically it's been only deaths captured by the county medical examiner. And this year it includes state data about deaths of homeless county residents, mostly people who died in medical care settings, which historically would not be captured in the report.
Numbers wise, how did that change in methodology change the results?
So there were 66 deaths that were captured via the new data source. Those were all considered to be natural deaths by the state, or by the county rather. So it did add what would have been 66 deaths that were previously not recorded in the annual report.
What constitutes a natural death?
Those are deaths that the county or healthcare provider would consider to be a result of the natural aging or disease process.
Well, in this new article, you write that the Domicile Unknown report reveals a number of broad trends in the deaths of homeless Multnomah County residents. That includes things like how people died, how old they were, where in the county they died, among other data points. So what were some of these broad trends that the report found?
There are a number of bigger takeaways, I think, in this article that speak to some trends that we're seeing over the last several years. One of them is homicides. Homeless county residents were very disproportionately homicide victims in 2022. The county estimates that homeless Multnomah County residents are 32 times more likely to be killed in a homicide than the general population. And that's a number that we've been that we've seen trending up over the last several years. Since 2019, homicides of homeless county residents have increased by more than 300%. There were 26 homeless homicide victims in 2022. We could not find anywhere outside of Portland within the county where a homeless person was the victim of a homicide, which means that up to 27.6% of all Portland homicide victims in 22 may have been homeless Portlanders, despite making up less than 3% of the population.